So Brian is cheating on me. I just wanted everybody to know.
I think you're misinterpreting things. I think it's not what it looks like.
I see. A more established, sexier podcast comes along and you just...
It's not more established. It has less episodes than we do at this point.
Really?
Yes.
Really? So a new, sexier podcast is what you're saying.
Well, and the guy that runs it does have a long-running podcast that is a little bit sexier and whatnot.
Man. What did I do?
But my heart still burns for you, Scott.
I understand. It happens to me all the time.
Aw. Wah, wah.
Well, Brian, why don't you tell people
What Scott's talking about is... Conor Mahood, who's a really cool guy I know via my friend Ryan and via Twitter and whatnot, just started a new podcast called 1,000 Stories. And what he does, it's a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Where basically he goes and has a set list of about, like, I'm going to say 20 questions or so. And he basically goes and asks these same questions to 1,000 different people.
It's a cool concept.
Yeah. All different walks of life, you know, nationalities, gender, right, age, everything. And kind of like, you know, through that, you know, massive amount of data, tries to go and see if he can come up with some, you know, universal truths about how we see life, you know, outside of culture and all those kind of things, you know, what we think about it. So it's a really, really cool podcast. And Connor was nice enough to ask me to go and, you know, be on it last week. It was actually a big adventure. I was on my way back from the Northern California trip and was recording the podcast in my car, on my iPhone, outside a gas station in Castro Valley, over Skype.
Over Skype on your iPhone?
Yes.
You were being interviewed over Skype on the iPhone for...
Correct.
Was he broadcasting live?
He was not broadcasting live.
Still, that's cool.
Yeah, but he was in Ireland.
Oh,
which makes
he's in Ireland?
Yeah, he's in Ireland.
Wow. I'm almost speechless. That's really neat.
It was very, very cool, yeah. Anyway, that is up. I think it's episode 5 or 6 or something. Connor also runs this fantastic movie review podcast called The Wireless Express Show with his buddy Luke. And that's been going on forever. That was kind of the first podcast I actually really, really started listening to. So when you brought up the idea of doing this, I was like, yeah, that's a really fun idea. And that's a great movie podcast. I encourage everybody to check it out. It's kind of like pretentious-free, you know, movie discussion of all different kinds of films, like, you know, Korean films, you know, classic Hollywood films, everything you can think about. And it's whereas I think a lot of movie podcasts can get a little bit pretentious.
Right.
I went to film school. I understand. I enjoyed that from time to time. But this is more just like, you know, two really, really smart people who are like your friends talking about movies and you get to listen in. So it's a really cool thing.
Fun.
So Wireless Express Show is at wirelessexpressshow.com. 1,000 Stories is at 1,000stories.org. And yeah, recommend everybody check them out.
Our first official friend of Tech Bacon.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I haven't listened to my episode. I'm sure all the other ones were very, very interesting. Yeah, I'm probably not going to listen to
it. It was making me mad, so I didn't want
to. The other ones were good. I can't vouch for me.
But, on that note.
Welcome to Tech Bacon.
Welcome to Tech Bacon.
I'm Brian.
I'm Scott.
And this is Sunday, April 17th.
on this hot Los Angeles morning.
Yeah, I hate the weather here. I'm going to be honest.
I love it.
People love it. They're like, sun, great. No, I want rain. I want fog.
Listen,
I want seasons.
It is 30 degrees and rainy in Chicago right now. And the 75 degrees and sunny here makes me so happy.
This makes me want to go and take all my clothes off and walk out of my apartment.
Please don't do that right now.
I don't know. I think I'm going to get some money for it. I'm pretty sexy.
And that's why I was jealous from the other podcast. See, it all comes around.
It all comes around, definitely. But some interesting news this week. A lot of a big release, which have got some interesting, you know, coverage. But let's start off first with Adobe had some interesting news, yeah?
Yeah, Adobe. Well, there was a couple things that came out of Adobe. I mean, one of the things news-related was Adobe is going to start offering a subscription pricing for its Creative Suite. So,
which normally costs about $10,000.
Oh, it's so expensive. I mean, you know, if you get the whole Creative Suite, you're shelling out a couple $1,000s for the entire thing. I mean, it's very expensive. It's obviously it's meant for the design professionals. It's not a consumer, you know, just average consumer product in general. But what they said they're going to start doing, and I think, I mean, like pretty much right away, you're going to be able to subscribe to the Creative Suite for a monthly fee. And it's not – I mean, I can't remember what the exact pricing was, but it's not great pricing.
It's hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, it's $100 per month. I mean, you get a lot for it, but it doesn't go towards purchase or anything like that.
Right.
You know, it doesn't go towards anything. I mean, it's basically, it's like you're renting the service.
And it was kind of weird. Like, I've always – Photoshop is an interesting beast because basically everybody I know has Photoshop on their computer.
I know. How interesting.
Right? Only 2% of those people have actually bought Photoshop.
Correct.
So when I first heard the subscription thing, I thought that was great. They're kind of going to realize that there's this great market there for all these people that, you know,
aren't design professionals.
Yes. They use Photoshop every day and, you know, Adobe gets no money for it. But instead, they're creating just another way to go and kind of rape and pillage, you know, at a ridiculous rate. I feel if they release Photoshop at $200, at $300, they would sell so many copies. They would, I mean, yeah. Cause well, every, it's the de facto tool.
I mean, they have Photoshop Elements, like they
everybody says, oh, that's nice. No, and pirates, the real thing.
No, totally. I mean, I see it on a higher level. Like to me, it makes sense. Assuming you have a design firm, right? And you're working on a big project and you're bringing in 20 employees just for one ad. An advertising company to work on artwork,
right?
And you're bringing them in for 3 months. That makes sense because then you can rent the Creative Suite, and you don't have to purchase 20 new licenses, you know, to work. So on that level, I get it. On any other level, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
And maybe that's what they're going for.
It's super niche, and I'm sure it's super profitable. But it seems like there's a lot of money.
They could have gone farther with it. They could have gone farther. Like they could have. If since they're going to start doing this, why not open it up to a whole crop of people that aren't using it as a design professional.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, what is their main audience? I think they have a much broader possible audience for that application. It's not even possible. It exists. It's just people paying for it.
I mean, I feel like
they could add,
I think they could
add millions of you know, paying customers.
Exactly. And I agree with you. I would say almost everyone I know has a copy of Photoshop and they did not pay for it.
Exactly. I may be running a version that's, you know, three versions old. But it still doesn't matter.
For what you need it for every now and then to do something fun.
Exactly.
Or create some, you're not creating a professional.
Sure. But here's what's interesting. All those people like me, you know, like you, we of course paid for it because that's what we do.
Right.
And I have that kind of money to spend. But anyway, you know, everybody uses it as the de facto image, you know, application, even if we don't go and really need all that full feature set.
Right. Just if you want to zoom or crop.
Sure. But if they go and sell it to us at a reasonable price, I'll pay it because I already know it. However, but there's this, if they keep making these prices ridiculous and it's at a point now where software prices are coming down, a package that costs that much is just weird.
It is.
You know,
it's unusual these days.
And I feel like they're going to go and start pushing people towards other options because finally when you have the Windows, what is it, the Windows 8 App Store, when you have the Mac App Store and people can go and buy a full featured image editing application for $30.
And I think
that can output and read Photoshop formats.
Well,
and it has layering. I mean, why bother?
And why not? Why not at least have two versions or have what would be interesting to me is you get the full version of Photoshop, but certain features are locked out. So the same set tools, but you can't export to these certain files. You can't use the certain coloring application part of it or – you know what I mean? Like the stuff that you as a consumer are never going to use.
Right.
The – you know, what you're going to output to print it as a, you know, 50-foot poster. You know, the average consumer's not going to use. So lock out those features, but you still have the full app and the same, you know, tool set.
Yeah. I guess it's just their overall strategy. And this wasn't on the table discussed today, but it's worth bringing up in relation to this. The whole way of thinking used to be that you would go and have these premium suites of applications that would cost $1,000 roughly. And everything cost $1,000 basically. And that's, if you know, from that stuff to music editing stuff to video editing, that kind of thing. And I guess you did see Apple kind of make that break first where they said Logic's going to be $200 or $300 now.
Right.
You know, and this week basically at NAB, they announced the new version of Final Cut, their professional, Final Cut X. Exactly. And apparently it's like a complete from the ground rewrite, 64-bit, brand new UI, like a ton of new features, like color correction.
I'm very excited.
I don't know if this is the case for sure, but it looks like they've rolled, you know, the color correction application and Shake and all that stuff into this one massive app.
Wow.
And it's selling on the Mac App Store for $300 in June.
Wait a second. Final Cut X is going to be only $300?
$300.
That's
– and an Apple –
I didn't even realize that. That's shocking.
And Apple had Final Cut Express. This is kind of what you're talking about.
Right,
it was like,
right.
You know, it's a version of it, but it's pared down feature-wise. But people still wanted to learn that.
So you're going to be able to use what people are already using to edit professional movies.
Exactly.
And you as a home user could buy it for $300.
Yeah. I mean, and to that point, it's like, what does Avid do? They're done. I mean, they're not done, but like, you know.
They
but,
have to do the same thing.
Yeah. And like that, I mean? To me, it's like that is so smart because you get people – you make it cheap for people to go and try your app and the hobbyist kid, right? The kid at home who's in high school who's doing videos with his friend and uploading them to YouTube or Facebook.
Yeah.
That kid goes to film school. That kid becomes the professional editor, and he's
and
got brand loyalty.
Right.
Yeah.
And you still need the premium equipment if you're going to do it on the high-end level.
Oh, sure. And you, I mean, obviously,
if you're doing a feature film, you need the premium equipment to do it. You're not going to be doing it on your MacBook. You know what I mean? You may do some of it.
In 5 years. But that's – but Final Cut, you can cut on your
MacBook.
Yeah, you
can. No, but you're not doing like the full thing on the MacBook.
You're not going to do your color correction. Usually.
Right.
Yeah,
but exactly. you can definitely use part of it on there.
Absolutely.
Wow. That $300 price point is – huge.
It's huge.
That's huge news.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and I think it's really, really smart. And I think it's that thing that Adobe is
missing.
They don't really understand that perspective. It's that we're scared of people pirating, so we're gonna go and lock it out.
Right.
We're afraid. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a user. You're a user. I trust users. If it's cool and great,
I
use it a lot, and
absolutely,
it's relatively inexpensive, I'll buy it.
If it's convenient and you don't feel like you're just getting completely screwed, people are going to buy it.
And maybe not in high school, but in college and afterwards, yeah.
Right, right. As just, you know, regular everyday people.
Yeah, no brainer.
On the flip side of not getting it on Adobe, they released a preview. You can't get them yet, but of these iPad apps.
And these are cool.
So this is forward thinking, in my opinion. And this is – it's so weird because it's complete, you know – and it's probably just a different team at Adobe. It's such a big company. But this is so forward thinking, in my opinion, that it, you know, it's just like, are these people working at the same company?
Right.
Because so what they announced is they announced these three apps for the iPad, Photoshop applications. They're not Photoshop on your iPad, but they're apps that work with Photoshop.
Right. Although Photoshop, they have demoed.
They have demoed a
Photoshop that's coming, but this is different.
But this is totally different. So like one of the apps is a color mixing palette. So you go on it. It looks like a painter's palette. Mm-hmm. And you take the colors and you take one color with your finger and you mix it around. Then you take another color with your finger and mix it to create your color. And then once you've come up with your color
– you throw it into the real application.
You shoot it into Photoshop on your computer.
It's very cool.
I mean, it's extending the capabilities of Photoshop to your tablet device is fascinating. And what a great idea. And like the other app was you can actually take your tools that you have on your tool
palette, yeah,
you know, like cut, pick, you know, all those magnifying glass, all that stuff. And you can move some of them to your tablet if you want. So you can have – you don't have to have that taking up space on your desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And you can move those tools over to the tablet and be working with it in conjunction of working on your desktop.
And you know what else? I wonder how much
so
of this
smart.
As well as a really, really great idea unto itself. They're going to get so much feedback in terms of how do people like to go and interact with those elements.
Oh, yeah.
Via touch, it's all going to get rolled into an eventual touch-based, you know, version of Photoshop.
Totally.
It's very smart. They're kind of letting people – it's a great resource, and they're getting free – they're letting people help develop them, you know, the new app
right,
for them.
Right. And the third one was like a finger painting. So you can actually like create images, finger paint on the tablet and move it over to – you know,
that's
the
really
computer.
Cool.
So they, you know, they showed really professional people using
right.
it. And there's these great watercolors, gorgeous, you know, applications and stuff like that. But I just the concept, this is the first we've seen of this really, I feel. The concept of extending a desktop app onto the tablet for use together, that's the future.
It's very cool.
I mean, I see a lot more coming of that. Like this Final Cut, I wouldn't be surprised if they do something similar. Where you can do some capabilities on your
like scrubbing
tablet
and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, or just – I mean like picking your clips and then shooting them over.
Well, especially imagine color correction.
Right, right.
Very, very interesting.
Totally. It's really
and it's gonna be
conceptually
this,
very cool.
Yeah, and it's going to be this gradual thing because – I mean I don't know. We've kind of like briefly talked about this, you know, off air before, but you know, what is it going to look like in 5 to 10 years? Because I think eventually the power is going to get there, and I think for a lot of things touch computing makes sense. Are we going to be looking at computers that are, you know – you know, like we currently do, we have a monitor on our screen and that's what we look at. Are we going to be looking at something that's on the table?
Right.
You know, just a very, very big monitor that's on the table or part of the table.
But you know what it reminds me, in a funny way, in the original Tron, the computer is built into the desk.
Oh, yeah.
As like a tilt up.
Yeah.
You know, funny that was kind of the, yeah. There was still keyboard and stuff, but like the actual concept that it was just tilted just a little bit, but built into the desk.
I wonder if that makes more sense ergonomically. Like I've never really kind of messed with it, but versus having your, you know, your arms
right,
here
like,
and your head being jerked back like that makes no sense, but
yeah,
having it be like this thing where you're looking down.
I wonder. I'm curious.
I don't know. Because eventually I think, you know, all this stuff is going to roll into that because a place where you can get the best of both worlds.
Right, right. Well, I mean, and you know, if you think about it, another thing that's come out this week, which kind of is an extension of that, is the Kinect SDK, the software development kit.
Very interesting.
That came out. So, I mean, it kind of goes along with what you're saying in a little more virtual way, So for people that don't know, obviously Kinect is the Microsoft 360. It's their new gaming device. And what it lets you do is control the games with your whole body.
Right.
And it's very cool.
It's not like the Wii where you have to hold something. It's you in open space.
Right.
And it can just basically track you.
And what it does, like I saw a little demo somebody put online where they used like a black light to show you how it actually works.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool. So what it does is it shoots out millions of little dots into space.
Kinect does.
Yeah. And then that's how it maps your body. And that's how it can map all the different movements. So it's not just like – it's not just taking a full capture of your body. It's actually pinpointing little dots on your entire body, kind of like what they do for motion capture animation.
Mm-hmm.
Same concept,
right.
Except that they're not physical dots on you. They're just shot out from the Kinect. So like if you see this video, it shows the person and there's millions of little green dots all over their body.
That's very cool.
So it's so it can it can capture joint movements. It captures everything on your body, so you can play, you know, the games with your entire with everything, you know. So what they
with everything, Scott?
With everything, Brian.
Tell me more about this video you watched.
No. So when it first came out, there were all these like high tech people went on and started hacking into it.
Totally.
And doing different things with it.
It's like the best toy ever.
Yeah. So yeah. Microsoft, in response to that, unusual for Microsoft, but instead of like cracking down on it, they actually opened it up. And they said, we're going to eventually release SDK and let people develop for the Kinect.
Now, is this
not
for,
just games.
Now, is this for the Xbox or is this for Windows as well?
You can plug the Kinect into your computer.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's very cool that you can do that. What I think this means is we're going to see a whole new way of interacting with the computers come out of this. And I think it was a cool move on Microsoft's part to open it up like this.
Definitely. Well, one thing is, I don't know if you talked about this before, but either this week or last week, Netflix on the Xbox 360 is also going to have Kinect support. So you can go and, you know, fast forward that kind of
Did
stuff.
Did you watch
with
the demo
hands.
Of that?
I haven't watched it.
Oh my God. So cool.
Is it?
So what it does is it's voice control and motion control.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do, like, let's say you're sitting watching a movie, you go Kinect and then it pauses and like you see this little bar at the bottom and then you wave your hand and then it recognizes your hand. Right. And then wherever you move your hand, you can like obviously you can choose what you're watching. But if you want to like pause, you hit pause and then you can fast forward by motioning your hand to the right, rewind to mm-hmm. the left, you know, like that. And actually just going like, you know, moving your hand back and forth and not dramatic movements or anything. Very, very interesting.
I'm going to be just the devil's advocate here in that this is all awesome and it's cool and it reminds me of Minority Report. And that is fantastic.
Right.
However, I wonder, in just practical sense, if I have the choice between going and moving my thumb a quarter of an inch and pressing a button to fast forward or going Kinect and then waving my hand and then waving my arm around, I'm probably going to choose the remote. But I love that it exists because I think the –
What if you can't find your remote?
Well, I'm going to buy I'm going to buy a $100 add-on in case I lose my remote.
Well, no, but I think it's going to –
If I lose my remote, then I go and I use my iPhone.
I think it's going to end up being built in to
devices. I think it's one of those things where there's lots of possibility. None of us know how it's going to be used most practically yet. And those scenarios, those use cases will kind of, you know, develop as, you know, people have access to the stuff, which is why the SDK is such a good idea.
Right. And they also – like Microsoft demoed something else in regards to this. They've been doing this project with NASA.
And this is one I thought was really – but it's very cool, but I thought was ridiculous.
I don't see it in day-to-day use, but I can – if you had a big enough screen and you're actually researching or doing something, I can see it a very easy way. Basically, NASA releases very high resolution images from the universe.
Right. Like different galaxies, different stars, all kinds of stuff.
And so Microsoft took the Kinect and lets you manipulate in a virtual world this universe. So you can like take your hands and you move your hands together and it zooms out and you're at the solar system and you're at the galaxy and then you're at the universe, you know, and then you can zoom in and stuff like that. If you're in a room where you have a screen that's like the size of a wall, I see it working. If it's just you sitting at your computer screen, I don't see it working.
But even something the size of the wall,
because it makes it virtual. It makes it like a virtual experience. It's almost like you're in a VR world, but you're
I guess
not.
I can see that. Or maybe if you're doing like a presentation, that kind of thing. But because my immediately go like, okay, if it's going to be a big, huge wall, then to get the type of resolution, like in terms of like controlling, you're going to have to either move your hands really, really far wide, or it's going to be a normal thing. You know, if it's going to be small, then you're going to want a mouse anyway to be that, you know, more precise, or some sort of touch device or something. You know?
It depends. I think it depends on the use.
Yeah.
You know, and
because, I mean, as cool as the NASA demo was, it was the guy like bear hugging himself and doing all kinds of stuff that just looked really, really inefficient to me.
Right. I mean, and from what I've seen of the Kinect, you can do very precise movements. You know what I mean? Like I said, it actually recognizes joint movement. It recognizes when you bend your finger. So if they wanted to implement it in a more precise way, you could sit there and just be like, you know, moving your finger up and down, left and right, and actually controlling movement on the screen. It doesn't have to be these grand, huge gestures.
Makes sense.
You know, but regardless, going to be cool to see what comes out of the SDK being released.
Definitely.
I mean, I think just the fact that they're releasing it like that, we're going to see an explosion of stuff we can't even think about right now. Yeah. And only within a matter of months, this stuff's going to come out.
And that's the thing is, too. It's such an interesting technology. It's going to go and take lots of people trying lots of different things before we can figure out how it's best actually used.
Right. And it's not only motion capture in general. I mean, it's not only controlling with motion. Like, it can be used for facial recognition. It can be used – imagine if you had like a virtual – like you're at a clothing store and you wanted to virtually try on clothes, you know, mm-hmm. something like this could be used for that. So I don't think it's just
or
at home
or porn.
Oh, that's going to come out real fast. Don't you think? Oh,
that's the wave of the future.
On a serious note though, I guarantee
there will be. Yeah, absolutely.
Real,
there will be.
Really?
In fact, I'd be surprised there already isn't. I'm shocked that there it could be. Maybe, you know, I shouldn't have sold my Xbox.
Oh boy.
anyway, as a quick aside, this is the first time we're broadcasting the show live, actually.
Right, it's a test.
It's a test. But I want to go and give a shout out to our friends Christian and Jared, who are in the chat room now. If you are listening to this on Facebook, you can jump into the Ustream channel and join the conversation and everything. And
thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for listening.
That's very cool. Now I just got really nervous.
Well, it's a good time to get nervous because it's it's time to talk about the playbook.
Oh, BlackBerry.
As
you can tell,
you
know, Brian and I, we just love BlackBerry. I feel bad that we end up dishing on BlackBerry.
Can I tell you, I got more feedback on how much we ripped on them last week than I have on any other thing for the show.
That's our friend Jamie actually said he used our arguments when he was talking to his girlfriend about getting rid of her BlackBerry. Listen, I loved BlackBerries in the day, and in the concept, they really pushed things forward, you know, as far as messaging devices. But God, these guys are just stuck in the mud.
Yeah, blah blah blah. They were great back in the day. We can't.
I know.
Last
it's just too.
Week.
It kills me. It kills me because these people are delusional.
Yeah. Well, and anyway, if you're not familiar, the Playbook is their tablet, you know, device that they just launched. Finally, after announcing it 8-10 months ago, they announced it's shipping, I think, next week.
Yeah, next week.
And basically reviews
Tuesday,
came out this week. It's a 7-inch device running, a 1 gigahertz or 1.2 gigahertz dual core processor.
Right.
Screen's supposed to be beautiful. Hardware's supposed to be beautiful except for the power button.
Right.
And the software's supposed to suck.
Right. I mean, across the board – they didn't say the software sucked fully, but it sounds like it's not finished.
It sounds beta, like things are crashing. I mean, there's no mail, there's no contacts, there's no calendar application. You have to use your BlackBerry
The fact that it doesn't come, I don't care.
It could be the most amazing ninja device of all time. It would not matter.
I can't even get my words together because the fact that it doesn't have email or your calendar is shocking. It's shocking.
Because what if your BlackBerry runs out of juice?
Right.
Or what if you
and
use it?
That means you have to be a BlackBerry user to buy one.
Yeah.
You're limiting yourself to only BlackBerry users.
And you're limiting yourself to a rapidly shrinking market as people jump ship from BlackBerry, you know, all over the time.
It's just unbelievable. I mean, I want to get my hands on it just to play around.
Because I want to be able to talk smack firsthand, basically.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and there, you know, this week – one of the other BlackBerry executives was interviewed on air.
Oh, was that Basile, or how do you say his name?
Yeah. And, I mean, it's like these guys keep getting caught with their pants down. And, like, the reporter didn't ask a crazy question. The reporter asked, you know, what about these bad reviews for the – and the guy looked so flustered.
Well,
he didn't know how to answer.
At first I didn't know, are they completely insane and live in bizarro world, or is it something else? And now I kind of feel bad. I think they know it's not a good product and they know
they're just trying to put on a good face.
And they committed to it a year ago, so what can you do? They just They just have to go and sell it the best
they
can.
You think they're actually self-aware? Like they
I don't think the one guy walks out of that interview like he did. It's like freaking out about the security question, right. Or this guy gives this weird review, you know, thing. Bizarro. Was it CNBC interview. Or something?
But yeah.
Just so strange. The best part of that, Scott, you pointed this out to me. You demanded I watch it.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
There's one point the guy's trying to go and sell the product and why it's better because of the security features. Because users do not understand the threat matrix of cyber. That's a quote. The threat matrix of cyber.
I mean, come on, dude.
Cyber.
Who are these people? I don't understand.
Oh, and as Jared in the chat room points out, but it has full internet. Actually, it has the full internet.
Right,
is what he said.
Full internet.
Full.
But no messaging. Or
yeah.
Oh, and you know what? I was listening to This Is My Next Podcast. I love those guys. They're great.
That's the Engadget crew and their new thing.
Yeah, their new endeavor. And Josh was talking about, and I just mentioned it because I haven't had a chance to play with the device, but not Josh, one of the other guys was talking about how even Gmail in the web on the device doesn't work right. The web-based version, which they're touting, you can do everything on the web that you can do. It doesn't, you know. And the one last thing, I'll talk about this and then we have something fun. They also are touting Android.
Oh, yes.
Apps.
And you can run Android apps.
Okay.
But
did you see how it works?
It's a virtual machine.
It's an emulator. Yeah, it's a virtual machine. So it loads up an actual Android OS on top of.
No.
Oh, yeah. It's not like the apps just run. It's like running parallels.
And first of all, the fact
like
that
you get the notification bar and the whole thing, like, and you get a desktop with your apps.
So none of it's integrated?
No, zero.
Here's the thing. Okay, guys, we're never going to talk to anybody at RIM, but come on. You do that. All you're saying is like, oh, our native development platform sucks. No one's going to use it. But here you can use this. Please buy us. Please.
I mean, specious at times, this whole thing just makes me.
Yeah. You know, it's just a comedy of errors. So rather than go through more of the ridiculous reviews that came out, what I did is I basically took Jonathan Geller's review from Boy Genius Report. We decided to go and have a little fun little game here. We're going to do some playbook Mad Libs.
Okay.
Okay. So, Scott, I need you to go, and I have a list of about 20-some words here. I need you to go and, you know, give me.
Okay. Go for it.
Okay. So the first one, I need a noun.
A noun. Tree.
This is going to take a little bit. People, it'll be worth it. Don't worry.
That's okay. Bear with us. This is fun.
Yeah. A plural noun.
Cars.
Another noun.
Another noun. Speaker.
An adjective.
Extreme.
I'll take extreme.
Extreme.
A color.
Chartreuse.
I like that.
I don't even know what color that is.
A plural noun.
Printers.
Another plural noun.
Wheels.
Another noun, please.
Another noun, please. DVD. God, my brain is so tech focused.
A verb.
A verb.
Ending in ing.
Sailing.
Another adjective, please.
Fascinating.
Well, that one actually makes sense. What shame.
Darn.
Okay, halfway through, people. Hold on. Another plural noun.
Sunglasses. As you can tell, I'm just looking around the room.
Another noun.
Another noun. Dude, come on.
Pick something out of the air. What'd you have for breakfast?
Wallet. I didn't have a wallet for breakfast.
Another plural noun.
Eggs. Since we're going on breakfast. Well, now my brain's going to turn totally to food.
Another plural noun. That's fine.
Forks.
Noun, please.
Oh, my God. Another noun. A street.
Plural noun.
I feel like we're on a game show. And the plural noun is ropes. Only a couple more.
A naughty activity.
A naughty activity. Making whoopee. To go with the game show theme here.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice dodge.
Thank you.
Past tense verb.
Ran.
Verb.
Play.
Are you sure? The category is plural noun.
The category is plural noun. Beaches.
I like that one.
Beaches.
A verb ending in ing.
A verb ending in ing. Drinking. Alcohol, preferably. Are you actually writing that down?
I am writing that down.
Last one. I cannot wait to hear this.
Last one, noun.
Noun. Stick.
Okay. Mad Lib's version of Jonathan Geller of Boy Genius Report's excerpt review of the R.E.M. playbook. The playbook's 7-inch tree is beautiful, and the 1024 by 600 resolution packs a lot of cars into a tight speaker. Colors are extreme and vibrant, and chartreuse levels seem quite good, as do viewing – I can't read my writing here – viewing, as do with viewing printers. I don't believe what normal wheels will see on April 19th out of the DVD will be that different at all from what I've been sailing, and that's a little fascinating. For all the sunglasses Rim has made in the OS department, the playbook's wallet feels rushed in almost every way possible. From eggs with the UI and design to random forks and annoyances, the software on the street book shows one of Rim's biggest ropes, its lack of ability to make whoopee. In daily use, Rim's own apps like the browser and video apps ran on me multiple times. When I play into Facebook, I've even gotten out of memory beaches. Only one or two other apps were drinking, alcohol preferably.
Oh my God.
There is no native mail app, contacts app, or calendar app. I can't help but feel like the playbook, as it stands now, is an unfinished stick.
And you know what? That could have come right out of the mouth of one of the research motion executives.
And I think all the points actually hold, strangely.
I know. Funny enough.
Yeah, okay.
I think we should type that up and post that so people can actually read it. Right? We'll take a picture. We'll throw it up on Facebook or something.
Oh, very nice. Thank you for your help, Mr. Gold.
And now we're going to move on to Brian's app reviews.
App reviews, yes. A couple of interesting apps that came out this week that I was excited about that I wanted to talk about. First one came out most recent one actually. Basically there's a new Twitter client. You know, there's all this noise about the problems
right.
with that ad bar. It was called the Dick Bar by a lot of people in the community that the official Twitter
people
client
did not
had.
Like that.
And Twitter's been saying, you know, don't go and make any more clients for the third party clients.
Yeah.
And so basically what we decided what a company called Tapbots decided to do was go and make a new Twitter client. I guess they've been working on it for the last year and they brought it out. It's called Tweetbot.
Right.
And you might think, what can you really do with a Twitter client that's all that interesting? And I got to say, it's a really, really great experience. It makes tweeting fun again in a way that I wouldn't have anticipated.
So what kind of new or different features
on
this one?
The look is a little bit different. It has a very, very specific UI and look. It actually reminds me a bit of an Android application. It's very kind of, not like robotic, but it has,
it's a clean
– instead of round, corners, it has a bit more like square corners. It has that kind of,
sharp lines,
a robot thing. It's a vibe, But also the best feature, the two favorite features of mine is number one, in terms of list management. In the old Twitter application, to go and change lists. On Twitter, you can make lists of different followers. Like, I have a list of friends and then, work and then, tech and then writing and all kinds of different stuff.
Exactly.
You had to go and basically, go to a different, about screen and then go and switch from there and then go back to the thing. It was a big pain. Here, they basically have designed it so when you're in your timeline, you basically hit, the word timeline at the top, then it gives you access to all your lists. So you can change it basically with two clicks.
Got it.
Super easy, really, really fun.
That's nice.
And also there's this great thing with left swiping and right swiping, where if you swipe on a tweet left to right and it's part of a conversation.
Like on a particular tweet, not just the whole screen.
Correct. On a particular tweet, it'll basically like this. It'll basically show
– oh, wow.
It'll bring up all the conversation thread for that entire tweet.
Oh, that's nice.
Where before you'd have to go and click it and then click another thing.
And then it would go a couple screens before you could actually get to that information.
And also what's really cool is you can go and get related tweets by right swiping. Then it will go and find tweets that are related somehow. And
that's really cool.
It's really, really cool. It's a great way to join a conversation that you see on Twitter.
It's almost like they took a jumping point from the web, the new Twitter web implementation.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the way it goes to the right when you click on a, they took it
absolutely.
And made it better.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, and this is just a subjective thing, but just the UI of it, the look of it, it's fun. You want to go and interact with it. It makes it very, very, and I guess on a dork level, it's just you're excited to use it. It just makes it really, really fun to use.
Yeah, that's really nice. That's really nice.
And so that's called Tweetbot. The company, like I said, is called Tapbots, and it's on the iTunes store. I think it's $1.99, but it's for a Twitter client. It's worth it.
Yeah.
And there's not going to be any stupid ad bars coming your way.
Right.
So
I mean, and that's an app that, you're going to, if you use Twitter, you're going to use it on a daily basis. $1.99 is nothing.
Yeah. And I've actually completely ditched the official client now and use this exclusively.
Really?
Yeah.
Exclusively. And you're loving it.
And it's fantastic.
That's great.
Cool. You don't have to, it's one of those things where, the one thing that they got, the original Twitter application used to be called Tweety, and Lauren Brickner was this amazing developer that made it. And it was like the premier, Twitter client for a long time. And but once they bought it, this level of innovation that he, you know, created with that app originally, like the whole, you know, the whole thing where you scroll, you know, you pull down to refresh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That started with Tweety. That was his innovation.
Oh, really? He actually made that. They were the ones.
Lauren Brickner. That was one guy. He just did that, and now it's across iOS.
Oh my God,
for everything.
Not just iOS. It's Android too. I mean, that's all over the place.
It's a great innovation, and I feel he's a great developer, and continues to be a great developer. But in terms, I think, of the mission of, you know, Twitter, they've kind of maybe moved away from that kind of great innovation in terms of, in part of their, you know, their corporate mission, I guess, whatever. The other app, and I post about this on the Facebook page, is Atari Greatest Hits.
I love it.
Now, I grew up, as I'm sure a lot of people our age did, playing, you know, the 2600. We had Atari 400 growing up, which was basically had a membrane keyboard and it did the real arcade versions of the games.
Oh, you had that?
Yeah. And I spent many, 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 many hours at a Round Table Pizza in Pleasanton playing lots and lots of Tempest and other Atari-based, you know, video games.
That's very cool.
And, you know, there have been different ports that have come out here and there, and but Atari basically released this game, and it basically has 100 games. And it's basically has, you know, I think 30 or 40 of them are actual arcade games. The rest are 2600 games.
Right.
And they're all on your iPad or your iPhone or your, you know, iPod Touch.
And it's the game. I mean, it's the original game. It's not some knockoff of the game. This is from Atari.
It's the real deal. And like, you know, everything's the same. Graphics are the same. Sound's the same.
It's so fun.
Amazing. It's really, really great. Then that basically when you download the app, it's free and it comes with Pong for free. And then you can buy packs of two or three games. I think they're a couple bucks. Or you can buy every single game in the app for $15. Which, if you are interested at all, I recommend just going for the $15 because you'll buy two or three, and I'm not sure if it double charges you, but in case it does, if you get one, you'll want to get the rest eventually.
What's your favorite so far that you've?
Well, it's my three favorite as a kid. It's Missile Command, it's Tempest, and it's Centipede or Millipede.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Fantastic.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It's not flawless because obviously you're using a touch interface and something.
Different than a joystick.
Or like, you know, in Tempest, you had like this rotary controller that you spun.
Oh, right, that was right. Like they had for Arkanoid, that same kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you had a, you know, there's that, the trackball for Crystal Castles. Crystal Castles?
Crystal Castles. Yeah. And Missile
Command as well, yeah.
Yeah.
So like some of those things don't work. Missile Command works really, really well because you can actually, you know, touch where you want you're targeting.
Oh, so you're.
And that's really, really cool.
That's great.
But hitting the buttons can be kind of hard. Sometimes your finger will move off the three buttons.
Right.
And also, you know, Millipede and Centipede are really good in that as well.
How crazy is it that 100 games take up no space on this little device where each one was like the size of an iPhone? Bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Each cartridge was bigger than an iPhone for these games.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's baffling to me.
It's so cool. The one thing that's not here, I forget if Atari made this or not, there's not the original Star Wars game, which I love.
Was that an Atari game?
I can't remember. It used the same kind of like, you know, line, you know, vector animation.
I can't remember. I know the one you're talking about. I used to love Tempest, man. I mean, just as a side note, and we can talk about this at another time, but growing up, my dad owned video arcades.
I did not know this. Your dad is the magic man. Every time you tell me a story about your dad, I can't believe A, that it's true, and B, that I hadn't heard the story before.
Yeah, arcades my whole life. Video arcades, you know, from basically the late 70s until I was in college, my dad. And then he actually ended up selling all his arcades to Sega, I think.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, they ended up buying like a bunch of these arcades in the 90s. But so I loved Tempest, man. And I would have unlimited tokens, you know. So, we'd walk in, I could play games.
I used to hate people like you.
We would go and it didn't matter. I mean, it was like, obviously, and we had these little pouches of tokens and it was all token based. And we'd just like go refill.
there was an arcade in Pleasanton. I can't remember the name. If anybody, if Dan, if you're in chat, like, you know, write what the name of the arcade was. I can't remember. Yeah, I just would love it. It was just the best thing ever. and what's also cool is there's this thing that's coming out called the IK that started as a joke, I think, on is it ThinkGeek?
I'm not sure.
Basically, what it is, it's a hardware cabinet for your iPad that comes with a joystick and like six buttons, and it allows you to go
like a tabletop thing.
No, it's like a little mini stand up like thing.
Shut
Here,
up.
I'm gonna pull it up for you.
Oh, that's crazy. So it actually like it sits on the desk. It's like a wood. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It's like a miniature arcade cabinet.
Oh, my God.
And it started as a joke, and now it's kind of – you think it's being released like in June, I think. It's a real deal.
Do you remember when they had those actual like little they don't sound as big as what you're talking about where they had – oh, no. Those little tabletop ones. They used to sell those by themselves.
Oh, but they'd be really, really small.
Right. And it was
LED.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, this is like it's basically you plug in you slide in your iPad at an angle the screens used to be at, and it has six buttons and a joystick.
That's so cool. if you're listening, so go to thinkgeek.com and search for iCade, and you'll see a picture of it. It is so cool.
And it's coming out June 2nd. It's going to cost $99, but it is awesome.
I think I want to get my dad that as a gift.
It's so cool. Like, the one thing I don't know
I hope he's not listening.
This comes with – the iCade actually comes with its own port, I think, of Asteroids.
Oh, really?
I don't know if it's going to be compatible completely with those other things. Hopefully they go and work something out, because if you could go and – you know, if I could go and play Millipede or Centipede or Missile Command and this thing, like, oh –
That is
best,
so cool.
Best thing of all time.
That is so cool.
Totally. Wow. Amazing.
Nice. So, good find.
Yeah. So Atari Greatest Hits available on the iTunes App Store. Highly recommended. Get the app. Get the game. Get all the games. You'll be very happy.
A couple of cool apps.
Yeah, definitely. Cool
apps. This week for food, don't have a ton, but I do have something very – well, one and a half kind of things. So there is a restaurant out here called Fred 62 in, I guess it's Silver Lake-ish area. It's a diner, you know, just like a sit-down diner. And they have – there's two – I walked in last night – no, two nights ago. I walked in with a buddy of mine, Sam, and I said, there's two things we have to order here. One is the red velvet cake, which I'll talk about in a second. And the second –
with the red velvet cake.
Just hold on. Hold on, Brian.
You're obsessed.
I know. And the second was fried macaroni and cheese balls. Don't laugh. Let me tell you, this is an amazing concept.
It sounds great.
I mean, they take mac and cheese and they put it in a ball, they bread it, and they fry it. It is delicious. It's perfect. It's perfect. Imagine – I mean, it's like when you
is
get
– breaded?
It's breaded. Okay. So imagine, you know, when you get mac and cheese and it's got the topping, the crust, it's that in every, you know, small little meatball style mac and cheese, and the mac and cheese inside. It's very filling, but it is so, they do it so well. They also make these at the Cheesecake Factory, not as good and not, you know, more processed than a homemade version at the small diner, you know, but an amazing little concept. And if anybody has a chance to try those at any point, I highly recommend it. And I wonder if they could be made at home. I don't know the exact concept for making them, but man, they are good.
Are there any interesting spices or anything in the breading, or is it just straightforward?
It's pretty straightforward. I mean, it tastes like fried.
Yeah. One thing that you should try. I had a friend had a party recently, and another friend kind of made a bunch of food because that's what he does because he's awesome at it. And he had this mac and cheese that was incredible, and he had a secret element that made it amazing. And we're like, what is it? Because it tasted.
There was just something that was just different to it.
It made it pop. It was incredible. I couldn't place it. Paprika.
Really?
Yeah. He added paprika to the crumbling, the bread on the top. It was the best thing I'd ever had in my life.
Wow.
It was fantastic.
I got to try that.
Yeah. So if you ever are making mac and cheese or try mac and cheese balls, throw a little paprika in there. See how it works.
That could that sounds like a way to just elevate the dish.
Yeah. No, it was exceptional.
So the other thing I'm going to rant about is the red velvet cake for a second. Unfortunately. So I said, these are the two things I want to get. I go to order the red velvet cake, and the guy informs me that they don't make the red velvet cake there anymore. Let me explain the red velvet cake at this place for a second.
You know why? Because it's boring.
No. Let me explain something. It's not a red velvet cupcake. It's not – this was traditional Southern style red velvet cake. Completely different than anything you've tasted. It's very rich. Like, I couldn't – it's a small bundt cake style thing that they served. Mm-hmm. Comes out warm with this like cream cheese topping on top of it. So rich and moist and delicious. And it was the first time years ago I had red velvet cake ever was at this place. And I was very, very, very upset that they didn't have it anymore.
Did he say why they didn't have it anymore?
He said what happened was it was expensive to make. And if they didn't sell enough, it would dry out and they couldn't reuse it. So they started losing money on it, because if there were days where they didn't sell out the whole thing, then they just had to throw it away.
So just to clarify, they stopped making it
because it was too good.
Because people weren't buying it.
Because it was too good.
And then if it was too good, people would be buying it.
The ingredients were too high quality that they couldn't let it sit.
No, it sounds like people weren't buying it, so they were losing money. So they said, since people aren't buying it, let's not make it. You know why they weren't buying it? Because everybody's over red velvet cake.
But let me tell you, red velvet cake has been around for a very long time.
Yes.
Before it became this popular sprinkles cupcake.
The Egyptians like red velvet cake.
No, but there is – and I'm actually going to find it for next week. There's a story of the history of red velvet cake, and nobody actually knows the real – it's interesting. They really don't know where it came from. Some people say it came from the South. Some people actually say it was originated in a restaurant in New York.
Came from wizards.
It just magically appeared one day. Someone said, I want cake that is red.
Somebody with a very, very long beard.
So anyway, I was very disappointed, but very happy that I got to have the mac and cheese fried balls. It just sounds weird. I can't help it. Anyway,
well, on the note of mac and cheese balls and the death of red velvet cake.
Oh. Yeah.
Boo.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thank you very much. This for joining our live first test live feed.
Yeah, I think we're going to be doing this every week now. So we'll put a heads up, you know, on the Facebook page in terms of like what time it is. Usually we record on Saturday, so this is a little bit of an anomaly today. But yeah, if you like the show, please stop by iTunes and go in and rate or write a review for the show. That's the best way to go and kind of, you know, pump it up in the ratings and stuff and get access to more listeners.
Exactly. And shoot us a comment if you feel on Facebook or on the website or anywhere. Really.
Yeah, we're on Twitter at @techbacon. Emails wise, I'm Brian at Brian with a Y at techbacon.org.
Dot net. And I'm Scott at techbacon.net.
We should buy it. We bought .org, right?
Yeah, I think we did.
Okay, good.
But we don't have the email set up.
We can forward that. Yeah, everybody, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
In case of a real emergency.
So good.
Thank you very much.
That was fantastic.